and I exchanged it for something that no one can pronounce, Miss Skimmin. But I dearly love my husband, and that was just a way for us to signify that we belong as a family. But my husband's uncle at our wedding said, "So you'll never be right again, right?" Yeah, very funny. No, I'm always right. I'm still right. But no, I'm excited to be here with you all. And I have a question. Have you ever had a religious experience with a dessert? Yes. Yes. If you haven't, I will pray for you, that you may know the glory of the Lord in that way. No, seriously, I would love to tell you today about an encounter that I had with the joy of the Lord. And I'm serious in this. And I had it in an unusual space, in a dusty dump. I mean, it is literally was a dump until it became a town called Anapra, Mexico. And I was down there with a group from Church in the Mall serving a school there called Susanna Wesley. And our team of 10 had gone down there to partner with the founders of the school, Pastor Antonio Briones and his wife, Dina, who had started this school probably about 2 decades ago, because they saw such an intense need amongst the poverty that not only did these people need to know Jesus, but they also had so many more physical needs as well. And so they started this school to break the chains of poverty through the love of Jesus and education. So we were down there to kind of serve them. And we stayed the week in this house together as a team. And there were about 10 of us there. And it was just a wonderful week. And every day we would go to the school and we would work. We would, you know, serve as best we could. And then in the evening we would come home and we would be served a meal prepared by local women. And we ate well. I mean, we seriously ate well. And about midweek is when I had my encounter with Jesus in a new way. Now, I've known Jesus for a while. I met him when I was 16 in a concert hall. Things like that happen, y'all. But it would be about 5 years ago that I would be in Anapra, sitting down for a meal with my fellow mission team members, and I would be served a strawberry shortcake. Now, this was not that thing you get from the store, you know, that dry, spongy thing that comes in packs of six, and then you top with, you know, Cool Whip and throw on some really unripe strawberries. No, my friends, let me tell you. This was a delightful biscuit, homemade by the hands of Marisol, the blessed hands of Marisol, I must say. And she had prepared this. She was the one serving us that evening. And she was Deanna Brione's sister. And so she had given her evening to prepare a meal for us and prepare this most delightful dessert. That was that lovely biscuit topped with homemade whipped cream. Have you ever had homemade whipped cream? It is amazing. And then it was just saturated with fresh strawberries. I mean, strawberries that not only tasted delightful, but smelled like heaven. And it seems funny to kind of relate faith to a dessert. But it was in that moment, surrounded by these friends who were soon becoming like family to me in that week, that I got to taste, literally and figuratively, the glory of God's creation. Not only in the product of wheat and milk and strawberries, but also how Marisol took that and made it into something even better. That she took God's creation and made it something beautiful for us. Because she did that out of her love for God. She took that as a gift for us to make more goodness. And she extended that love that she had for Jesus to us who were seated around that table that evening. You see, we are designed to participate in this world, and in fact, sometimes even enjoy aspects of it, to find joy in it. And so often in kind of Christian circles, we're told that we shouldn't have fun. That if you're having fun, you're not doing it right, right? When in fact, we are designed to participate in this world and experience all the goodness that God has for us. We're designed to be in healthy relationship with God and his creation. And if you've been kind of journeying with us in this series, you know, I've been doing this at my church, at Church in the Mall, and Dave has been leading you in this as well, of what it is to define the relationship, to understand, one, maybe what the relationship is, what it is currently, and then maybe what it really should be. And how do we get from here to here? How do we make that movement, that change? So what is our relationship with creation? And not simply food, though that's often a very important aspect of creation for many of us at times. But what is that relationship? Now, and Dave talked about this a couple weeks ago with regard to our creation and how it's described in Genesis, that we are invited to be in relationship with God because that's our creation. And in particular, we're given this command that comes to us with to eat freely in the garden, except for one tree. So there's this idea of abundance, like all of this available with a limit. Eat freely, sustain yourselves, enjoy what is here. And I often think about it like being a master gardener. Now, a master gardener, yes, plants will grow on their own, but if they are tended to, if they are cared for, there is so much more of an abundance that comes. And there is a harvest that not only that gardener gets to enjoy, but so do others. And I think that's part of our design. And so when God places us in kind of this garden image, I think we need to take a little bit of that from that, not to be necessarily literally gardeners in life, but to think about how do we tend and consume from creation. And so there is an abundance and there is a limit that God places there. You know, and we don't often like boundaries. We don't like limits. We want to be, you know, free to do what I want. You know, I have toddlers. I live in this world. You know, I do what I want is often their response back to me, whether it's literally or just in how they're going to roll. But the idea, though, that limits are good. And I think God gives us limits because we need them. We need them for our own good. Have you recently overeaten? Have you had a lovely meal that you just kept eating and then you made yourself sick? I can do this with tacos. You know, just one more. And then one more becomes two, three. And then suddenly I am in pain and I regret every choice I made. And I think that kind of relates to life in general. You know, looking at how God places this limit on Adam and Eve in the garden. You know, every tree but this one. And it all goes south when they reject that design that God has for them. You know, reject what God has kind of said. You know, you have all of this but one. One tree to abstain from. But again, I want us to keep this in mind throughout today, is that we are designed to enjoy creation. That we are designed with this beautiful identity to be the image of God. Now, as Dave talked about last week with y'all, that we are to engage in the world, to use and consume it as part of that image of God, as part of our design and our purpose. You know, but so often, like Adam and Eve, we reject God in our actions, even if we would never say it out loud. So what is our relationship with creation? What are some of the things that we enjoy, and how do we enjoy them well and in a healthy way? How do we better understand our relationship with this world as it is created and how we co-create in it? Now, the thing is, in this world, all things have the potential to be good. So many things are good, are desirable. You know, even in the garden, Eve sees this fruit, and it's described for us as pleasing to the eye and good for food. You know, the one tree they're not supposed to partake of. It's pleasing to the eye and it's good for food. The fruit of the tree wasn't the problem. It's why they consumed it. It's why they took it and ate it is the problem. See, it's the attitude in our consumption that tells us that we are rejecting what God has designed for us. And that is what sometimes makes things either a positive or a negative in our life. It's all about the attitude of our heart. And that comes even in the form of relationships, how we approach things and how we live them out. And our relationship with things, with the world, with worldly things, they have an impact on our relationships. And whether that's a relationship with ourselves, with God, with others, how we treat things and how we treat people is often connected. So let's talk a little bit about our stuff. And I hope that I can make some of you uncomfortable because all of these things make me uncomfortable. I look to at least offend you a little bit because I think it's an offense that we sort of feel the, ooh, that may be a problem. Maybe that's something I need to work out. And if it's just all me, it's all me, okay? You all just sit and enjoy the ambiance. So we have our clothes, we have our gadgets. My husband has lots of tools. Lots and lots of tools. There are the things like technology that we have. We have not only then stuff, but also sometimes the things that we take in our lives. You know, do you have more screens in your home than people? You have more TVs, more devices than you have people in your home. Just questions. None of this is bad or good. I'm just asking some questions here. I just wonder, why do we always need the latest technology? The new phone, the new this. Do we really need things in high definition? I mean, I really don't need to see the news anchor's pores. Do you? And I wonder sometimes, is this good? Is this really helpful? Or do I lie to myself and tell myself that it's good when in fact it's more of a hindrance? It's more of a distraction. We've got clothes. Some of us, clothes are a thing. Some are not, and clothes are necessary. It's a good thing y'all wore clothes today. I very much appreciate that. But clothes are also a status symbol. You know how to understand people because of what they're wearing, right? And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad. Have you taken bags upon bags of clothes to whatever Goodwill because they're no longer necessary or wanted? You have an overabundance there. How many bags of perfectly good clothes have you given away because they're no longer needed? Maybe you had too much. And sometimes I think that's where it goes wrong for us. We have too much stuff. Now, I'm in the process of moving. And as we're packing up, my husband and I keep finding boxes that we never unpacked from the last move. Anybody feel me on that? Yeah. And we're probably going to move them again. And I wonder, why am I holding on to this stuff? Or maybe it's, what does this stuff have a hold on me? It's probably a sign that I have too much stuff. Okay, let's get off of the physical material stuff and all the things that we can consume otherwise. Let's think about those things we take into our minds and even into our hearts. You know, think about movies and TV shows, music, podcasts, entertainment in general. Those things that come to us through those little things we carry in our pockets all the time. You know, that device that you, when you wake up in the middle of the night, and you take it with you to the bathroom for some reason because you can't let go of it. So what comes to us through that is information, entertainment, and all of that is good. But are we enjoying it or are we binging on it so we're numb? Have you reached the end of Netflix yet? Have you exhausted all the good shows and now you're just trying to find something new to watch? Because you always have to have some noise going on. Some of us are news junkies. Some of us like to be in the know. Many of us, about 2 years ago, about 2 o'clock every day, we whined and dewined. You know, we were trying to take in information, trying to figure out, navigate what was going on. And that's so good to kind of go, I don't know what's coming, so I got to figure it out. But the problem becomes this, is that we are wired as humans. We are wired to look for things, to pay attention to things that unsettle us and scare us. It's actually a survival technique. We're looking for threats. But when it comes to news or the information we take in, can that be a problem? Because we keep on seeking out the things that scare us and unsettle us. And then factor in the fact that a lot of us get most of our information from social media, which is wired by these things called algorithms to give more of what we look for. So what you click, you get more of. You click it, you get more of it. You click it, you get more of it. And it keeps feeding a cycle in which we see nothing but negative news. And the thing is that the more negative news that we take in, the more likely it's going to generate some anxiety in us, generate some depression. It can even heighten our own worries that are going on in us. This is my fact that's been kind of convicting me, is that as Americans, we are on social media 145 minutes a day. 145 minutes a day. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but it's about 2 hours and 25 minutes. That's a long movie, y'all. You ask me at 7 o'clock at night if I want to watch a movie, and I say, well, how long is it? And you say, it's 2 hours and 25 minutes. I'm going to say no, because I want to get to bed. And yet I don't get to bed because I'm scrolling on social media. It's not a bad thing. It's an amazing thing that connects us to the world and allows us to connect with people across miles and generations. And yet at the same time, that's a lot of time. When you sit down and think about 2 hours and 25 minutes of your day, that's a lot of time. Or to put it another way, that's a really good night's sleep for a new mother. So as we think about like what we're taking in on a regular basis, what we're bringing into our minds, our souls, our homes, this is the stuff, this is the world. So what is it and why are you doing it? How does it affect your relationship with yourself, with others, and with God? You see, as people who are created and designed to experience God's creation, designed to enjoy the variety, the fruitfulness of it, my question is, are we tending to it? Are we consuming it with the intention to be more like God? And being more like God and bringing more goodness, much like Marisol made more goodness out of love for people. And that was so interesting to me, being in Annapurna and going there to serve and then having her serve me. That's not the way it's supposed to work, right? Unless you're in God's kingdom, in which I serve you and you serve me. And there's this beautiful reciprocity. There's this beautiful gift of connection and relationship with each other because we are centered on our love for God and we want to extend that love to others and to each other. But is stuff getting in the way of that? Are we being good consumers or are we being consumed? Do we find ourselves pursuing the created more than the creator? Because when we do that, we get our priorities out of order. And Jesus speaks to this disordered view of the world in the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount we find in the Gospel of Matthew for about 3 chapters as well as in Luke's Gospel. But today I want to pull from that Sermon on the Mount that we find in Matthew's Gospel. And Jesus has gathered his disciples away from the crowds. He's gathered them up on a mountainside, and he's teaching them about the kingdom of God, and he's calling them to reorient, to reprioritize their lives. And he's speaking to people who say that they believe in God and that they trust God. These are his disciples. These are people who have signed up for the job. They have said, hey, I'm following you, Jesus. But Jesus sees that there's a disconnect between what they say and what they do. They say that they trust God, but their lives, their behaviors say a different thing. And they're not trusting in that identity that God has given them. And they're looking for stuff in the world to shape their identity, to give them meaning and purpose as opposed to their creator. And so if this relationship with stuff and God is out of order, we can find ourselves in a place we never intended to be. And so let me read this passage to us. It comes from chapter 6. It's verses 19 to 21. And I've also tapped into verse 24 there. But Matthew 6, 19 to 21. Let me read this for us. Stop collecting treasures for your own benefit on earth, where moth and rust eat them, and where thieves break in and steal them. Instead, collect treasures for yourself in heaven, where moth and rust do not eat them, and where thieves don't break in and steal them. Where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be loyal to the one and have contempt for the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. You cannot serve God and wealth. You got to make a choice. Now, this word for wealth is this old word, mammon. And it was sometimes even described as a god, as an evil god. And so there's kind of a taint here. And it has the understanding of not only being wealth, but money or property, riches, even food. And so when Jesus is speaking to his disciples here, he is talking about, okay, guys, you got to make a choice. What is your priority? Is it God or is it all this other stuff? Or more accurately, what consumes you? What do you really chase after in this life? And the problem is we like to have choices. We like to hedge our bets. We like to have a backup plan. We don't like to make the choice. Let's just be honest. We sometimes just like to live our life the way it is and just let things come at us. But we have to make a choice. We have to be aware and conscious of what's going on around us and what things and what the world is doing to us. Or as the great theologian Bob Zillin sang, you're going to have to serve somebody, be it the devil or may it be the Lord. You're going to have to serve somebody. So what are you serving? Are you serving to get things? Or are you serving to be in relationship with God? Now, hear me on this. Jesus knows that we are concerned with what we have and what we don't have. He's not being insensitive here to our needs. Remember, he's speaking to disciples. So this is not a strategy for the starving. This is an invitation and a warning to disciples who have enough. And most of us have enough. We may not have everything we want, but I think we have enough. And if we were asked, we would definitely not rank things above God and people, would we? But do our lives say something different? This passage is really meant to make us uncomfortable with our lifestyle, to make sure that it is lined up with what God has designed for us. So is God really first in our lives, or does God get the leftovers? Does God get you at the end of the day when you're exhausted and mentally done? Does God come after all the stuff? Do you put more time and energy into looking for the next best thing that you need or have told yourself that you need as opposed to seeking God? To serve someone, to worship someone, means that they come first. They are the priority. Then everything else comes. It's not that they don't matter, but there's a difference between matter and worship. And I think sometimes we get this way because we don't believe. We may say it, but we don't truly believe that God is enough. Why in the world were 2 years ago people hoarding toilet paper? I'm serious, my friends, and I don't think that we worship or serve toilet paper. I do know that there are certain brands that are much more appreciated in my home than others. But seriously, why were we hoarding this if not because we were worried we wouldn't have enough? It's not a love for the toilet paper or whatever else it is. But I think we are driven by sometimes this fear that God is not enough. And so we fill our lives, we fill our minds, we fill our homes, our souls with stuff. Whether that is material stuff you can grab onto or all the entertainment that we fill our minds with in order to numb out. Is it information? Is it knowledge? Is it experience and activity? And again, all of these things can be good. But are they apart from God? So if God is not enough in our homes, our schedules, our busyness, what does that say about our priorities? When we look back at that garden, we see all the trees, but one wasn't enough for Adam and Eve. And I don't think we're that much different. So as we seek to kind of fill our days with everything but God, everything we can grab for ourselves, consume, take in, we find ourselves numbed out and drowning out the voice of God calling for us in the garden. That's what this does to us when we are so consumed by everything but God. We're actually hiding behind whatever the stuff is for you and for me. But God is enough. God is more than enough. God is trustworthy and worthy of our trust, worthy of us saying, you know, God, I'm not sure, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try to start to live with you first. See, when we start here, when we start first with loving God and loving others, everything else is enough. So my question for me and for you today is, how do we do this? How do we reprioritize? How do we reorient? You know, to get what we say matches what we do. How do we prioritize that relationship with God? I think it's about our mindset. It's about where our heart is. And where is that treasure for you? What are you so devoted to? And sometimes we have to treat it like we're an Olympic athlete. You know, we're focused on that gold medal. We are focused on God. And everything else in life can happen around that, but that is the primary focus, the goal that we allow to consume us. We focus on Him. We focus on planning out and acting out our lives with that goal in mind. And this is why we engage in those spiritual practices that we have, like prayer, Bible study, spiritual conversations with one another, gathering for worship, engaging in communion. Some of you may be fasting during this season as we prepare for Lent. Pastor Dave gave you a task last week in his sermon to serve others. That can be part of this, is to remind ourselves and to reorient ourselves around that relationship with God as primary. And to look at our lives and see that we have unique missions within God's kingdom. For example, I have a mission as a wife, as a mother, as a pastor, with God at the center. When I put God first in all of those areas of my life, it's not perfect. I have toddlers. If you ever want to understand sin nature, come to my house. You will see it full display in me, because children are a test and a beautiful, wonderful creation. But when I put God first, when I allow him to shape my day, my life, the rest of it falls in place. Now, this doesn't mean that we will always have what we want or what we need at times. Jesus knows our reality and knows probably that most of us have what we need. Most of us have what we need. But he doesn't call us to be careless in this life. He doesn't call us to not have a care, but in fact to be free of the care. To be free of the care of things. Food, money, clothes, shelter, again, they all matter, but matter, again, is different than worship. And worship, are there things that you seek, that you pursue above God? So how do we seek first God to be free of the care of things? To not give it all up, to not toss it all away, but reorient so God is first. How do we move some of these things down on that priority list? I think a lot of it comes down to generosity. How do we break the hold that some of these things have on us is to be generous. And I mean this in all areas. See, sometimes when people start talking in church about generosity, it's like code. Right? It's code for like pass the plate. Now, we are called, I believe, to be generous with our whole selves. We are called to be generous with our time. Yes, our money, our resources, our possessions. And there's something beautiful that happens when we are generous, because we open our hands to share with somebody else. And suddenly that thing that was consuming us no longer has a hold on us. So how can we be generous? How can we be charitable? Charity is this old word that's defined not as like giving your money away to an organization, which is usually how we think of it, but how are we to engage in charity is actually to engage in the love of humanity. And it's viewed as the highest form of love. Because when we seek to love others, we are loving God. We're engaging in that love of God. And it's this beautiful reciprocity, this give and this take, where we receive from God and we extend to others. So how can we be generous to fully engage in that idea of being charitable people? Because being generous with others, we love others and God best. Because the best way to love God is to love others. And the best way to love others is to love God. Because suddenly that person doesn't have to be your everything, because God is. And suddenly what they receive from you is everything you've received from God. So, what has a hold on you? What are you consuming that is suddenly consuming you? Name it. Name it. Define it. Recognize the relationship you have with that thing may be dysfunctional. And when you do that, find a way to flip it and be generous. Again, it's not the stuff that is the problem. It's our heart towards it. So let's change our hearts. And this may involve, kind of fasting from something, fasting from it so that you can give it away. Break its hold on you by being generous with it with somebody else. That's your call to action this week. And so just as Dave kind of gave you a call to action last week of serving others, it may be a continuation because what you need to give generously is your time. You may need to give yourself to other people in this way. That may be what has a hold on you because busyness and importance fills your schedule. That may be what is consuming you. So for you, it may be, I need to give my time to somebody else. For some of us, it may be more the material stuff. It may need to be some money or some giving in that way. But name for you what is holding you, what is more of a priority than God, and give it away. And in doing so, you reorient yourself back to loving God by loving others. Because in that, we find ourselves seeking first that relationship with God, which is so foundational, which is so critical for everything else. And then we find ourselves engaging in this beautiful creation that God has given to us, tending to it and enjoying it in it, creating more goodness with God. Amen. I think you guys close with a song. Allow me to pray while your friends come up here and lead us again in music. And I thank you for the privilege of being here today. I thank you for just, thank you. Allow me to pray a blessing on us as we start to close our time together with music. But gracious Lord, I ask a blessing on all of us. I ask that you would make your face to shine upon us. Lord, that we would sit in the warmth of your love and your grace, knowing our identity in you fully, starting there first every day, so that we may love others graciously from the love that we have received from you, Lord. Break the hold that this world may have on us, so that we may give freely of what we have received from you. I ask this in the precious, powerful name of Jesus Christ. Amen.